Welcome back to Two Larrys and a Mike. I'm Larry Dowdy.
Larry Bly here.
And Mike is feeling better, I hope.
Oh, dear. Well, this is really interesting.
What is...
Well, Mike has decided to start a mariachi band. Mostly so he can play one of those big old enormous guitars. And also he can wear one of those big old sombreros, which he's taken a liking to. But they're having a little problem, Larry, coming up with a name for the group.
Yeah.
The first one they tried was the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
But that was taken,
that's
right?
Already taken, that's right.
Yeah.
And they briefly went by Ranchos Jiveros. But too difficult to say and spell. So they've settled on Deep Fried Chimichangas. They're call themselves Deep Fried Chimichangas.
Deep Fried Chimichangas.
I think they may have spent just a little too much time with a Mexican menu. Don't you think so?
Possibly so. Yeah. I guess it could have been worse. They could have called themselves I'll Take Number 6.
That's what we always do when we go to the Mexican restaurant,
or we
point to it on the menu.
Always safe. Well, I hope you're well. You're not experiencing spring fever or anything?
I'm a great pointer.
Okay.
So anyway. Oh, me.
We've got a great show this time.
We do?
Yeah, we do.
Of course we do.
This is episode 39.
Oh, my.
And we're going to be talking about 1972. And some say that may have been the year that was the best year ever for albums.
It has been written on more than a few occasions.
Mm-hmm. So yes, we will break that down for you in just a little bit. I guess we should talk about a time for living and see who's celebrating a birthday lately. Happy birthday wishes to Quincy Jones, composer, conductor, 89.
104 years old. Quincy, you know, he has been producing records since he was almost a teenager.
Yes, yes.
So he has been around a very long time.
And just gets better and better and better.
Yes,
country
does.
Singer Michael Martin Murphy and his horse Wildfire, right? 77, Rick Dees.
Oh, yeah.
He's finally starting to age a little bit. 71.
Disco Duck.
Yeah.
Great disc jockey. Well,
that's it.
Singer guitarist Keith Potger of the Seekers is 81. Singer keyboardist Rose Stone of Sly and the Family Stone is 77. You know, she did the organ music and all that stuff. She's a great keyboardist. Singer guitarist Ray Dorsett of Mungo Jerry is 76 in the summertime. Singer Russell Tompkins Jr. of the Stylistics, 71 years old.
I love those guys. Bassist Phil Lesh of Grateful Dead, 82. Mike Love of Guess Who? No, not Guess Who. The Beach Boys, 81. Sly Stone of Sly and the Family Stone, 79. Of course, question is, does Sly know how old he is? And guitarist Howard Scott of War, 76. Ryan Cooter is 74.
Ry Cooder is one of the great session guitarists of all time.
Indeed.
He's had quite a few groups of his own, too. Never a breakout artist or anything, but he has been on all the major hits. Well, not all of them, but most of them. A lot of them. Not all of them. Many of them.
What are you saying?
I'll get it right.
But he's a big name.
Yeah,
big name in music. Also, happy birthday to John Sebastian of The Lovin' Spoonful, 78. Harold Brown of War. He's a percussionist for the group, 76.
Well, we have one here of note.
Oh?
Singer Clarence Frogman Henry is 85 years old.
Ain't got a mother.
This is one of his songs.
I ain't got a butter.
This is a frog song.
I ain't got a not even a brother.
I just knew you want to hear this morning. But I hope you'll forgive me.
I'm a lonely frog. I ain't got home.
Now, did you ever play that song?
No, no. And he had a birthday. He didn't croak, right?
Oh, no. That's pretty good, Larry. That's pretty good. It's a little early for this, but yeah, that's pretty good. So, yeah, well, anyway, one more. Ruth Pointer of the Pointer Sisters. Oh, we love the them. Pointer Sisters. She is 76 years young. So anyway, happy birthday to all of the above and many, many more. You remember many more. She was a good woman,
yeah, too. She was great. That's great cookies, by the way.
Yeah, I think we've covered just about... Oh, Chaka Khan had one, but I can't remember how old she is. I have it with me today.
69.
Yeah. Thank you for saving me on that one, Mr. Lair.
I thought, well, man, I saw that just this morning. Duh. By the way, 1972, we're going to be talking about that in the albums in just a second.
Take it easy. Get back, honky cat, to sweet Melissa.
There's heat, babe. Take a walk on the wild side.
Here you go back, Jack. Do it again. Oh, super fat. Good though you're still in the way I feel. Saturday in the park. Oh, I'm on my way. I know I am somewhere not so far from here. Respect yourself.
See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
I did a little research on the year. In January of 72, 12 miles of U.S. Highway 51 in Memphis was renamed Elvis Presley Boulevard. January 21st, Keith Richards jumped on stage to jam with Chuck Berry at the Hollywood Palladium. He was ordered off for playing too loud. Berry later said he didn't recognize Keith. How do you not recognize Keith Richards? And would not have given him the boot that he recognized him.
No, for heaven's sake.
February that year, Paul McCartney's new band, Wings, made their live debut. February 13th, Led Zeppelin's concert in Singapore canceled when the government officials wouldn't let them off the plane. Why?
Why?
Because of their long hair.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
March 15th of 1972, Andy Williams hosted the 14th annual Grammy Awards, Carole King winning Album, Record, and Song of the Year for You've Got a Friend. But Best New Artist that year? Carly Simon.
I don't doubt that. She had a lot of hits.
In May of that year, Billy Preston became the first rock performer to headline Radio City Music Hall. June 10th, Elvis did the first of four concerts at Madison Square Garden. He sold out the shows in a day. It was something for back then. Diana Ross made her acting debut in Lady Sings the Blues. In Lady Sings the Blues, that was October 12th, and James Taylor and Carly Simon were married in November of that year, and get this, December 31st, the first New Year's Rockin' Eve with Dick Clark aired on NBC, later moving to ABC. It featured Three Dog Night, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Helen Reddy, and Al Green.
How about that? Yeah. And it's still going strong, and they still call it. It's now the longest title in the history. Dick Clark's Rockin' New Year's Eve with blah, 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 blah.
With Ryan Seacrest and a host of others.
Well, one of the great breakout artists in 72 is Roberta Flack, of course. Mm-hmm. First time I ever saw your face. Her recording of Every Time I Ever Saw Your Face from 69 debut initially floundered. All that changed after she got a call from Clint Eastwood, who said he wanted to use First Time, a 1971 film that would mark his directing debut, Play Misty for Me. He called me at home, she said. I almost passed out. He wanted to use my song as part of the movie. I told him okay, but I wanted to re-record it, and he said no, keep it the way it is. So, he was right, because the song became Billboard's top song for 72, and also took prize for both song and record of the year at the Grammys that year, and, of course, launched that album into hugeness.
You know, I was just listening to that song on the way in, and I had forgotten how soft and quiet that song was.
It is beautiful.
Yeah.
Another friend of yours, Don McLean, one of your favorite interviews. We'll be talking about interviewing people in a little while on my radio story today.
Okay.
Few lyrics have inspired more speculation than American Pie. It's much a pop quiz as a pop song. Anyway, Holly's death was meaningful to a lot of people in rock communities. Song wound up making its own headlines for its length, a whopping 8 minutes and 42 seconds. Mm-hmm. And for nearly a half century, it held the record as the longest cut to hit number one, until Taylor Swift broke in 2021 with her 10-minute-plus remake of the song All Too Well. Over the years, McLean confirmed some of the identities of the stars. Anyway, it became one of the big hits of 71 and the album of 72. So that's how that worked.
The Eagles. They came out with this album called Eagles. And it was the self-titled album, was recorded in February of 72 in London, was released in June. The album contained Take It Easy, which was released in May of that year, Witchy Woman, which was released in August, and Peaceful Easy Feeling, released in December. And since 72, they've released 7 studio albums, 3 live albums, and 11 compilation albums.
Ooh-wee.
Wow. But they are the Eagles.
They are the Eagles. Helen Reddy, I Am Woman, remember that?
Hear Me Roar.
A song arrived that could have been served as a soundtrack. I Am Woman, first released on Reddy's debut album in 71, had a rebirth the next year when it was featured in a feminist film titled Stand Up and Be Counted with Jacqueline Bisset. It became a big thing for her, as did her album. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Okay. All right. One of my favorite albums of all time, Stevie Wonder's Talking Book, came out in October of 72. I mean, how can you not like any album that starts out with You're the Sunshine of My Life?
Yep.
Great song. Later in the album, there's a song called Superstition. And one of my favorite Stevie Wonder cuts on that album, Blame It on the Sun.
Oh, yeah.
Always like that song.
Deep Purple, Smoke on the Water.
Yeah.
The lyrics, this is kind of a...
Oh, there are lyrics story. Besides the guitar riff?
There are lyrics. To Deep Purple's monster hit could not have been more literal.
Uh-huh.
They tell the true story of some stupid person with a flare gun whose reckless act reduced to ashes the casino in Montreux, Switzerland, where the band was supposed to record their new album. He burned the studio to the ground. Instead, they recorded in a mobile recording unit used by the Rolling Stones, writing Smoke at the last minute. Smoke, get it? As a filler to complete the album.
Huh.
Later guitarist Ritchie Blackmore admitted that he based the iconic recurring riff, one of the most famous in rock history, on the first movement of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. I don't see that, but that's what he says.
Okay, that's a deep dive if there ever was one.
That's true.
Rolling Stones, 1972. They sure know how to get the attention. Double album, Exile on Main Street. The song Tumbling Dice was on. I love that song, but I also love Tumbling Dice, the version from Linda Ronstadt as well. And there was only one more single that came off that album. That was a song called Happy. That came out in July of 72.
Yeah, I remember that.
The album, this is what I find interesting. In 72, the album had horrible reviews, but it would later be considered by critics as some of the best work by the Rolling Stones. In fact, Rolling Stone magazine ranks it number 7 on its list of the 500 greatest albums. That was in 2003 and 2012. In 2020, it dropped to number 14. But still pretty respectable.
Neil Young, Heart of Gold. A back injury played a part in inspiring Neil Young to write the biggest song of his career. Standing up with an electric guitar hurt, so he sat down and created a series of softer ballads, including the sentimental Heart of Gold, so he could sit while he was singing. Recorded at Nashville the day after making an appearance on the Johnny Cash ABC Variety Show, which was taped at the famous Ryman Auditorium, the home of the Grand Ole Opry. So anyway, it became a huge. The song put me in the middle of the road. Traveling there soon became a bore, so I headed for the ditch. Young may have shunned the mainstream, but a new vocal band, America's, fully embraced it with a single, A Horse with No Name, America, which sounded a lot like Young's song and wound up replacing Gold at number one.
Wow.
72.
There was one more cut on that album that I enjoyed. And, I just, you know, that whole Neil Young thing, I just couldn't reel in. It was kind of like Bob Dylan. You know, I like the commercial stuff, but everything else, yeah, I don't know. Old Man, the song I'm thinking of.
Yeah, that's a beautiful song, yeah. I think. I think Bruce Jacobson, my disc jockey friend, our disc jockey friend, says the man can't sing. We've had more arguments at my bar over that subject. I said, the man can sing. Have you ever sold 50 million albums in your life? No. So shut up and have another drink. He says he's got a terrible voice. He does have an odd voice. I have to admit, but I like him. And I just think it's a sweet voice. Yeah, I think it's a very sweet voice. Yeah. I really do.
Now, something I wasn't aware of in the song Heart of Gold, Linda Ronstadt and James Taylor do background vocals.
No, okay.
I wasn't aware of that.
Doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
So a lot of the 72 greatest albums, Exile on Main Street, The Stones you mentioned.
Yeah.
Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust with David Bowie. Thick as a Brick, Jethro Tull, man, we played the heck out of cuts on that thing. You remember that?
Yep.
Machine Head, Deep Purple, I just listened to it over and over again. Eat a Peach, the Allman Brothers. That was a big one.
Love that one with Melissa.
Yeah.
That's on there.
Sweet Melissa, which you says does
well,
not even.
Well, it could be Melissa. It could be Sweet Melissa. Okay. It's
Can't Buy a Thrill, Steely Dan.
Great, great album.
Was that their second one? I can't remember. Surely there was one before that in 72, don't you think? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Not so sure. Something, Anything, Todd Rundgren. Runt, he was once known as.
Yeah.
Superfly, Curtis Mayfield.
I love that.
Yeah. Paul Simon by Paul Simon. He couldn't think of a name, so he says, well, let me call it me. Let's stay together, Al Green. What else you got?
You mentioned Steely Dan's Can't Buy a Thrill from 72.
Yeah.
Get a load of some of the 45s, the singles, the hits that were on there. Do It Again. Also Reeling in the Years.
Oh, big.
On
big,
there,
big,
yeah,
big.
Yeah.
In fact, it's interesting you should mention that because when I was putting down the tracks for, oh, that's a big truck going through. When I was putting down the tracks for Seconds Guessing, I kept pulling up these various albums and I'd go through and I went, I don't recognize anything on this album. I realized how incredibly commercial I was back in 72 because I was a top 40 AM disc jockey, okay? So if the album didn't have commercial cuts that were a hit, I just didn't hear them. Mm-hmm. That isn't to say that I didn't listen to some of these albums or enjoy some of these albums. But for the most part, I had a real tough time gleaning some things that you would recognize. Yeah, yeah. Even the Chicago one was a bit strange, and there were others that I couldn't find anything at all.
And, you know, as I was listening to some of these albums, I also, which I'd forgotten how good they were, but a lot of the albums had cuts that were country crossovers.
Well, I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah, they...
Well, that's because you had groups like Alabama.
Well, but some of the cuts on these particular albums sounded so country today.
Like what? Can you remember any?
Let me see.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Neil Young would be a prime example of that.
Yeah.
Eagles. Eagles was the early days of the Eagles.
Right.
Some of the stuff on that first album called Eagles was that way. J.J. Cale, do you have anything on him?
No.
J.J. Cale, now this is an album, they say it came out in 72, but everything I'm seeing says it came out in 71.
Now, you know, well, as you heard a few minutes ago when I was going into some of these albums, details on them, oftentimes they came out in 71, but maybe something hit big, and so the album was either re-released or became a huge hit commercially in 72, a year later.
Of course, J.J. Cale, his hit from 472 made it up to number 22, Crazy Mama.
Oh, I remember that.
Which was a great song.
Yeah.
But J.J. Cale, whose real name was John W. Cale, actually wrote After Midnight and Cocaine for Eric Clapton.
Oh, really?
And there is an awesome version on that album, Naturally, that came out in 71, 72. After Midnight on that cut that J.J. Cale does is just an awesome version.
I know you were always a big Mott the Hoople fan. They had a big album in 72 called All the Young Dudes. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure they had any commercial hits at all. Did Mott the Hoople
album? I don't think so. No, I think they tried, but no, it didn't work.
Van Morrison, a hit mm-hmm. with St. Dominic's. That was the name of his album.
Okay, all right.
Stephen Stills' Manassas.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the OJ's, yep. Backstabbers,
yep.
which I assume was the name of the album. And I think
I believe it was.
And The World is a Ghetto War with a song of the same name. Mm-hmm. That was a big, big hit for them. So,
yeah. I was always a big Staples Singer fan.
Well, I know.
I love those guys.
Mr. D comes in humming the Staples Singer tunes all the time.
They released an album in February of 72 called Be Altitude, Respect Yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can pretty much figure out what was also on there. Respect Yourself, song written by Luther Ingram and Mack Rice. That was actually released in late 71 but rolled into 72. Also in 72, they released I'll Take You There, which is another great song. But Stax filed for bankruptcy in 75, the record label, and the Staples Singers signed to Curtis Mayfield's label and released Let's Do It Again. And it was produced by Curtis Mayfield and became their number one pop hit. That's what I got from 1972. It was an excellent year.
Well, that's the greatest of plenty, in my opinion.
I guess this is the time where we roll into seconds guessing.
We do.
Yeah, something I hope, if you're going to pull something from the prize closet this time, something better than Slim Whitman.
Oh, it's going to be. I can assure you. Okay. In fact, this is a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame member.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
If you get all of them right, you're going to get this lovely album.
Boing, boom, chuck, chuck, chuck.
Yes, I know. You've always enjoyed the Kraftwerk.
Oh.
This is called Electric Cafe.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty certain you don't have this one in your file.
I'm pretty certain you're right.
It includes such cuts as the one you're listening to, Boing Boing Chuck, Techno Pop, Mystique Nonstop, The Telephone Call, Sex Objects, and The Electric Cafe. I know how very much you liked the Kraftwerk. And could you please tell me something while we're talking about this?
Okay.
Why is Kraftwerk a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Aren't you? Aren't we all? Isn't everybody?
So they passed over Three Dog Night for Kraftwerk? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I guess so. I don't know. But anyway, that's the way it goes.
Maybe now I know why Dolly Parton walked away.
Well, you know, that thing with Dolly Parton, you know, she should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has a lot of songwriters, and she just happened to write one of the biggest rock and roll hits or pop hits of all time.
Sure.
I Will Always Love You.
Right.
So if she never did anything else, she certainly deserves it for that. Doc Pomus, who was only a songwriter, although he did sing blues, but he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right.
Chet Atkins.
Yeah.
As a record producer and also a musician, is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So why not Dolly? Okay, why are we even talking about it?
I'm not sure. So I get Kraftwerk if I get
you get Kraftwerk.
Okay,
boing chuck, boing chuck. Okay, Larry, let's see if we can figure this one out here. Easy peasy.
Oh, that is easy. Lou Reed.
Sugar Plum Fairy came and hit the streets.
Walk on the Wild Side.
Yeah.
Looking for soul food and a place to
That's from Lou Reed's Transformer from 1972. Here's another song.
A little out of time, but I don't mind.
Easy.
Rod Stewart.
Well, I suppose you're thinking I bet he's sinking or he wouldn't get in touch with me.
Never a dull moment, Rod Stewart.
You Wear It Well?
Hang on a second. You Wear It Well is the name of the gut. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sweating that one.
So here we go again.
Okay. He's
the kind of guy that would say, hey, baby, let's get away. Let's go someplace, huh? Where I don't care.
Is that Mel? Melba Moore?
No, it's Aretha Franklin.
Is that Aretha?
Daydreaming.
Okay, sound okay.
From Young, Gifted, and Black.
Okay, all right. All right, here we go. That's good. Good song.
All right.
Well, that sounds. Sounds like the Moody Blues.
It's Moody Blues. Isn't Life Strange from the album Seventh
okay.
Sojourn?
Okay. I remember the album. I remember the song. I just drew a blank on the title. It's the Carpenters.
Absolutely. Called A Song For You. Song For You by Karen Carpenter from A Song For
Goodbye.
You, the album.
I was going to say Goodbye to Love.
Oh. It is Goodbye to Love.
Oh, okay.
You got it right. I got it wrong. All right. This is an easy one.
Cisco Kid?
It is Cisco
War?
Kid. War. Yes, indeed.
That's a great intro to that song.
The World's Ghetto is the name of the album,
yeah,
too,
yeah.
As a matter of fact. Yeah.
Good
Cisco
album.
Cisco Kid was a friend of mine, and hopefully a friend of yours as well. Good old Cisco.
I think he liked you better than me.
There we go.
Son of a gun. Yeah. Carly Simon.
Name of the song?
You're So Vain?
You're So Vain. And the album was No Secrets was the name.
Great, great, great album.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, only two more.
Okay.
Only two more of this. Oh, easy.
That's Edgar Winter Group.
Yep.
And what is it?
Free Ride, Edgar Winter
okay,
Group.
Okay, I had Frankenstein just stuck in my head
the
for
album,
some
they
reason.
They only come
yeah.
out at night.
Yeah. Right. Then she confronted. That's Bread. Riding there. Aubrey. Simply pretended not
to care. What do you think it was?
I thought it was Aubrey, but I don't know. I don't think it is.
It's not Aubrey. It's
I know it's Brad.
It's a Diary.
Ah,
from the album "Baby I'ma Want You," "Baby I'ma Need You," and "Baby I'ma Talk Funny Sometimes When I Get Around You."
You know, I don't think David Gates and Brad ever. Well, I can think of two kind of up tempo songs they ever did.
Oh, really?
"Mother Freedom," which I always loved, but it wasn't a big hit, and "Guitar Man."
Huh.
Which that was kind of medium, I guess.
Well, I guess. Huh. I suppose. Well, you did okay. I thought you did pretty good.
Yeah, I did.
Barry. I thought you did pretty good.
Just mediocre.
Well, you did all right.
So you just hang on to that album.
It was a tough thing. Oh, I have I have something. I have a follow-up.
And now, a podcast follow-up.
I thought we could use a little retro production with the Ampex, the Ampex retro.
Is this the paper's Reaver. Equivalent of correction?
I thought it'd be funny to do a little production. So anyway, the retro follow-up. I mean, remember a couple of podcasts ago, we were talking about Vicki Lawrence.
Yes,
did it come that Vicki Lawrence had a hit record? Well, I did some research.
Oh, okay.
We posed the question to ourselves some time ago, how did Vicki Lawrence, a comedian on the Carol Burnett show, should have a top 40 Billboard hit record? It took a bit of digging and connecting a few dots to find the answer. It turns out, Lair, that Vicki Ann Axelrod, that's her real name, started singing and dancing in high school. Who knew that?
Huh.
Joining the very famous singing and dancing group, the Young Americans. Remember them?
Oh, yeah.
They toured nationally for a period of time. And after that, she became a stage actor, where Carol Burnett discovered her after she sent her...
I'm sorry, that's my stomach.
We need to eat.
Can we hurry the show through?
She sent a photo to her in a lookalike contest. Carol Burnett was looking for someone to look like her to be on the show.
Yeah.
And Carol hired her, and she was on for all seasons of the show. Meanwhile, she married her first husband, Bobby Russell,
who
happened to be a songwriter and a song producer.
Okay.
And thus her break into recording. The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia went to number one in the U.S. and Canada, and she and Bobby Russell eventually divorced, and with that went her recording career. That was the end of it.
So that's why she was a one-hit wonder?
Well, it just goes to prove it's often good to be married to a record producer and a record writer or a songwriter. So that's how that happened. I thought you'd like to know that.
Well, that's interesting. Well, thank you for
sharing
that.
I just literally ruptured myself doing the pre-production for that. But we will have that whenever we need it.
Okay. Sure, that's good to know.
I'm sure you'd like to get rid of it, but we're going to have it anyway.
Do we have a great radio moment?
We do.
Oh, okay.
We do. Back in the early 70s, a new club opened here in Roanoke. I can't remember the name of it anymore. And I was dispatched by the radio station to interview the opening act, who was Fats Antoine Domino, who put on one heck of a show. I'll tell you that. It's a nice band. Mm-hmm. He sat at the piano and banged out all of his hits. It was great. And afterwards, he allowed me to sit on the piano bench with him, where I played the left hand, and I'm only kidding, where I interviewed him for a few minutes. He was the sweetest man in the world. He was a man of few words, and it was one of the more difficult interviews I ever did, gleaning no insight whatsoever from the guy. You can hear me here briefly trying to get anything of substance from the man.
Yeah. What do you think about the way the music is changing today? Do you think that it's changing too drastically in one direction, that we're starting back toward the old direction of rock and roll?
Well, it's coming back.
Seems to be, doesn't it? There's a lot of that early rock sound coming out.
Yeah, matter of fact, I like the music of the day, but the older one, I think you can understand it better. The words were more plainer.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. There was recently an album which we received at the station of a lot of your really big hits, and a fantastic story about you in the cover.
Yeah, matter of fact, I just got an album a couple of days ago, first time out.
First you saw it. A lot of complimentary things, and I think you deserve it all.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you. Nice meeting you.
What a pleasure, my man.
That, my friend, is called Sweating Bullets. I hasten to add that Fats' first language, by the way, was French, and that's true.
Huh.
Well, he's from the Cajun territory.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Even though he grew up in New Orleans, so he had to learn English later, which he did. Anyway, sweet man, a rock icon, but a very difficult interview. So there you have it. That's from 1972, I think.
Wow.
In keeping with our 72 stuff.
I guess his music just said it all.
Well, it darn near had to. This interview is all I can tell you.
But that's a nice piece of history you got there.
Well,
so thanks for sharing
it. I thought so. I just happened to come across the tape the other day. And yes, I get these things directly off reel to reel, and still sounded pretty good. And considering that it was recorded originally on a cassette in the field, and then dumped over to 7.5 IPS on reel-to-reel. Yeah, yeah. I think it sounds pretty good. And the fact that it's, 50 years old, then it still plays.
Yeah, that's true. And any of the youngsters listening, you don't know what a cassette is, ask your grandparents.
It's one of those little square things you punch into a machine. And I got to the point where I could actually fix the tape on one
could
of those.
Could you?
Yeah, I would put it on a little block.
Yeah.
And put some additional tape on it to hold it in place. But I actually repaired some of those. Not easy to do. And it took a pencil to twirl it around on.
Yeah,
but yeah, eventually got it done. Yeah, yeah. I did.
So that's great. Thank you so much for sharing that. Well, shall we put the wraps on this one?
Yes, I guess so.
All right.
Well, the old fish wrapper right on it.
We appreciate you being here for episode 39 of Two Larrys and a Mic. If you like Two Larrys and a Mic, follow us wherever you download your podcasts. And be sure to share this podcast with someone by simply clicking the share button. We hope you're going to join us next time for Two Larrys and a Mic. I'm Larry Doughty.
Larry Bly here.
And
you still got that mariachi band thing going, so what can you do,
I'll take a number six. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.